Welcome back, babies, boys, and Broadway stars. It's me, Andy Clodfelter.
I am also Lisa Monahan. Hi. Okay.
You ruined it. All right. And this is 90s Court.
Did such a good job. Oh, 90s Court. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Your gruesome twosome is back. Andy always sets it up. You basically set it up for me like T-ball, and I just like
there was no reason for me to be so bothered by you just saying, and this is also Lisa Monahan. I'm like, well, I said I was Andy.
Well, you know, I'm really good at being so awkward, so it's perfect. It just worked out beautifully. Hooray.
We've been gone for so long, friends, and we're back. We're back with nourishment for all of you. We are on season four, and that's when, okay, so there's going to be a new season twist this season that you guys are going to have to look forward to. We're going to talk about the 90s.
Oh, boy. No one saw that coming.
Oh, boy. The ultimate twist. Yeah, gang, thank you so much for your patience, allowing us the time to get away and just fucking chill to help us have a little bit more appreciation for how much we love doing the show when we came back. But yeah, we're back. We had an enjoyable 2 weeks. I'll tell you what, being able to, I went to the couple movies while I've been gone. Like, it's just been great. Like, just being able to chill, like, cause you know, got the full, elixir of life. I'm invincible now, with the vaccination and everything. So I'm just feeling a little bit more comfortable, doing a few things that make me feel like life is somewhat normal again.
Yes, we have our round two coming up in, I think, 2 weeks. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be fully vaccinated. And then part of me is like, oh, no, I have no excuse to not do things anymore. Or like I very know. Little excuse to not do things. Just like, no, I can't just be a hermit forever anymore.
It's still like, even when I went to do stuff, it wasn't something like, if it was like a weekday after work, like I couldn't just like, okay, we need to go and then get going. Like it was like on a Saturday or something like that. I'm like, all right, got to pack all your gear. Get your fucking like your fucking pittance ready for climbing the mountain and some other shovels and shit, you know, stuff that you need just to make sure and make the adventure out there safely.
So
that's what we've been doing, guys. Hopefully you guys had a restful 2 weeks as well.
Oh, may I plug the podcast I'm going to be on?
Oh, yes, that's
yes,
right.
I guest starred last week on an episode of Well. I liked it, which is a really, really great episode. Excuse me, a really great podcast. Brad and Kate take these like two things that they love, like two movies they loved growing up, and they discuss them. Oh, excuse me, they take one. I'm talking about 90s
that
court.
That sounds like 90s
take,
court.
I was going to say, no, they take one movie that they loved and they discuss it to see like how it holds up and like, is it still as good as you thought it was? And I'm not going to spoil what the episode was that I guess start on, but the show is great. If you're looking for something else that's nostalgic, too fun, you know, really enjoyable people. Thank you guys for having me on. I don't know when it's going to be aired yet, but I will share whenever it will be aired. But that's one thing I did during our 2 week break was hop on another show.
I'm so excited for that, because even on Lisa's little patron Ask Me Anything, I was just so excited to hear something that Lisa had done
our show
for like that I hadn't heard yet. So like, that's why I always like also love her show with her husband as well, just because I never like I'm like. It's going to be Lisa, but this time I don't know what she says. So
and I don't have to do anything. It's the best. So
I will
alert you guys when that is ready to go. So yay.
Yeah. And a quick shout out. He specifically asked me not to shout it out, but I'm going to shout it out. So
too bad.
As many of you guys recall, a while back we'd gotten those clocks made for us, handmade by our good friend Jake. Who is a patron, who made those amazing like clocks. If you haven't seen them, check it out on our Facebook or Twitter or wherever. You can probably find them on there. So Jake has actually started a shop making various picture frames, melting galaxy clocks, things like that. He does an amazing job on handmade stuff. He has an Etsy shop. It is called Elements of Vice, V-I-C-E. Mm-hmm. So check that out on Etsy. He has some pretty amazing stuff. He's already selling out right now, so he probably will take a little bit of time to get some more stuff up, but I'm excited to see it as well.
Woo. Thank you, Jake.
There you go.
You're dabomb.com.
You're the one
beneath
our wings.
Were you ready for
that?
Yes, you are the bomb beneath our wings. I like that one, too. Andy,
horribly devastating.
horribly. You are the devastating Molotov cocktail inside of my cereal bowl. Listen, I think it's time to get into the things.
Yeah. Lisa, why don't you tell us about your thing?
All right. I'm ready. I've mentioned this thing on and off in the past, but I'm really tackling it head on today. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. There were few things that I coveted in the 90s, but rarely got because, and baby. Okay. But there was one thing that slipped through my Doritos dust-covered fingers, and I cry about it to this day. Okay. And that thing is something that Steve Jobs released in August of 1998.
Whoa.
And it was the coolest shit ever. And no, it wasn't the iPod or the iPod video or the iPhone, but the fucking iMac G3.
Yes. Okay.
The iMac G3. Okay.
I really thought you were going to go with the iPod, but that's great.
I don't think those even came out until the 2000s.
No, I think that was 2000 or 2001. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. But prior to that, baby, ooh, baby, hold your horses. We got ourselves the iMac G3. Okay. Ooh, baby, if for some reason, just hearing iMac G3, if that doesn't mean anything to you, let me help you. They were the like cutesy, egg-shaped, kind of like translucent colored computers that Mac or the Apple released in the late 90s. And they were featured in my dreams and also in the If You Have My Love video by Jennifer Lopez. And they were just everywhere. And so it was originally released with the semi-transparent, what they call Bondi blue color, and eventually went on to include strawberry, lime, grape, and tangerine, and then blueberry replaced Bondi blue. I guess Bondi blue was like the original one that came out, and then they were like, well, we gotta expand, and they went with like the cutesy food colored names. So like I said, aside from the colors, it was also totally different because your entire computer was in this like egg-shaped case.
Yeah, no more, no more towers, just right there.
Yes, that which was like, I think even to until I really looked at it in detail for the show, I didn't fully realize it was all inside that monitor. I thought there was like another piece that like they just didn't show. It's like, no, everything was inside it, and now I want it even more. And like it had a handle. I didn't know what that, but it was a handle so you could carry it around, and I had no idea. I missed out so hard.
Especially because you like didn't need internet or anything like that. You could just take that anywhere, plug that bad boy in, and start doing whatever the hell you do on.
Just, you have a plug, go into a Starbucks, guess what? You're playing Apple Solitaire, whatever that is. You don't have that? If they don't have that, guess what? You're watching the Flying Toaster screensaver for a while. Like, life is good. Like, I really want to buy one. So it was also, like I said, it was the first computer to also come standard with USB ports and also the first Mac computer to drop the 3.5-inch floppy disk drive. Can you imagine
that
it took till 98 to stop for them to be like, now's the time?
I mean, like, I remember being upset by that because our computer was so old, and so we had like these old games and stuff that had like the flop, like genuinely floppy disks, and the big floppy ones, and like they didn't go to anything.
Oh no! Well, that's wow.
They went for like computers,
but
like. No, I don't remember. I think we had like a compact Presario or something like that. But then like as time went on, like we got more and more computers would not be able to handle it. And so I'm like, well, I guess we don't have this game anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the end of that. And then it just goes away forever. Mm-hmm. Like all of our hopes and dreams. So just for fun.
Computer
for
software hell.
That's right. For our computer nerd fans out there, the stats on the first iteration of the G3 were as follows, okay? It was a 15-inch CRT display, a 233 megahertz processor. It came with 32 megabytes of memory, if I read that correctly, a whopping 4 gigabyte hard drive.
That's actually, 4 gigs? That was pretty big back then.
I know, but now that's like,
oh, that's nothing now, but still, that's wild.
I sneeze gigabytes of hard drives.
That's, like, I don't know, that seems inaccurate.
It's a side effect of COVID. You sneeze hard drives. Uh-huh. It's so weird. So super weird. The introductory price was, Andy, I would love it if you could just guess.
Here's the thing. I know that Apple products were just as horrifically expensive then as they are now. I'm going to go with, because stuff was less expensive back then, though. So I'm going to go with $900.
$1,299.
Okay, so even more. Good.
Yes, and adjusted for inflation, that is $2,096 today is what that would have cost.
it feels like everything that they everything they ever make is like $1,200, like new yes. iPhones, new, like everything is around that price.
Oh yes, as someone who recently got a new iPhone, I can concur. It is around that price.
Oh no, range. You don't have the 8 Plus anymore.
No, face. I gave up, which was awesome time. Well, because I needed it for storm chasing. I needed a better one. That's and fair. I was right. I needed it. So one amazing thing about this computer is that it literally had two cords that weren't related to the mouse. It had a power nice. Plug and the phone line cord. That was it. And so in the commercials for it, when they got past the, like, if you remember the ones where, like, all the different colors were kind of spinning around on the white background and stuff like that, mm-hmm. The other ad that they would run was, like, kind of like the Compact Presario or, like, the Packard Bell, which had the tower and the monitor and your microphone and your web camera and all of these wires going everywhere that just look like a hot mess. And they'd be like, and then there's this one. Boop. And there's, you know, it's beautiful design. It really was beautiful design. And two cords. That was it. So they even used, I saw an ad that had Jeff Goldblum in the commercials to advertise the most basic bitch version of iMovie that was on G3. On the G3, it was the coolest. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. This was just one of those, like, monumental and iconic items from the 90s that was, like, you either owned it or you wanted it. And if you didn't want it, then you were a little Linux bitch who yeah. hates Joy. And
I make my own computer.
That's true. Well, I like Sorry. To buy mine for $2,000 from Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. But like I remember when we were out in the when we lived in Kansas, out in the middle of nowhere, there was one flea market I ran into just for fun one day, and they had one. And I wanted to buy it, but I didn't have the money for it at the moment. And I regret that to this day. But I looked on eBay and they sell for like $50 to $300, except for one that I saw that was brand new in box for $9,000. That's kind of dope.
I mean, it is super sweet as like a collector's item, like especially if you're like, because Apple seems like it'd be a product that there's so many different products they've made that you could definitely have a collection of that shit. But as far as functionality, I don't know why you would want that.
Just for fun, baby.
It feels like something that would be fun to just, like, pick up and just, like, just freaking chuck like a discus. Like, really fun. Watch it just
yeet it over the neighbor's fence. I want to yeet.
It's very yeetable.
Well, with the handle, yeah. And just be like, that was the worst $200 I've ever spent.
It's $200 to do a hammer throw and watch it break.
But that's my thing. So welcome back. Season 4, off to a big start with the G3. What do you have, Andy?
Yeah, and I know we definitely discussed those in the past because I remember talking about the colors and stuff like that for sure. But yeah, I don't think we fully covered it full on. So as I had just mentioned, been going back to the theaters a little bit. I knew there was a reason I was wanting to mention that because my thing has a little bit to do with that.
Okay.
So let me get my notes pulled up on this thing.
You don't need them.
I mean, I have a vague memory, but I'm just like, what was I covering again? Here it is.
Yeah.
So the 90s was a time of magic and dreams. Some things were meant to last and some things persist still to this day. Let's say you're going to see a movie in 1989, Lisa.
Okay.
So obviously you got to have that $12 popcorn and drink combo. I'm assuming that's how I don't think it probably actually cost that much back in the 80s, but let's say it's 1989. But like, then you're like, I need something to put this a little bit over the top, right? Got the popcorn, got the drink. What am I going to take? I look down at that glass vase, that big glass case, and I'm like, what goes with this? What are you going to get? Are you going to get Kit Kats, Mike and Ike's, Whoppers, Raisinets, Junior Mints, M&M's, Skittles, Sour Patch Kids? I mean, Sour Patch Kids were the new hotness, so maybe that.
Yeah.
But, like, none of it, like, you're like, I mean, I guess M&M's, like, well, kind of like you can put some of those with the popcorn, but it just doesn't do it for you, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't. So, like, you got to have something that you take a scoop full of popcorn and just put this on it and then shove it all in your mouth like a fucking monster.
Okay. I'm so scared now, actually. So you need it.
I'm sorry. I made it sound so much worse. So essentially, like, I like to think of, like, because M&M's, like, they'll go with a handful of popcorn, but it's like, it's more like it's traveling on the same bus as the popcorn the M&M's are. But these basically practically became one with the popcorn. So in the 90s, we got two of the absolute undisputed best popcorn companions in history. One of which we have already, I've already discussed, like on episode like 3 or something like that forever ago. Mm-hmm. The other one is the main one I'm going to be discussing, which is Bunch of Crunch. Booyah.
Bunch of Crunch.
That sound of lack of, I think, you know what? I think we've had this covered before, that you having a complete lack of recognition of what the fuck Bunch of Crunch is, and that hurts
my
heart.
I'm on it right now. Bunch of Crunch. I'll even get off Wi-Fi for the Bunch of Crunch. Oh, wait.
So briefly imagine you're like, I don't really care for, I mean, Crunch Bar, sure. I mean, I'll eat it if it's there, but I'm not going to have it. But like, they're like, what if we take the best parts of Crunch Bar, just make them into little balls, and then like put a bunch, just a fuck ton of them in a box.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to be covering today.
That looks so good.
They still exist, and they exist even more than they ever did today. But back in the 90s when they came out, ooh la la, it was a movie theater treat, because it was only available in movie theaters for quite a while. Like, you go to that glass face to buy it, that's the only place you're getting it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Dude. And of course, the other one that I was discussing that I've mentioned in a super early episode for people who maybe not have listened to those, Butterfinger BBs. Thank you.
Yeah. Dude, hold on real quick. I'm at a website right now, Andy. You can get a 25-pound bulk bag of it for $90.
I know. I mean, like, that's the thing. I'll slip into, like, I'll just be in Dollar General or whatever, like, just grabbing a few little, like, cheap things or something. And all of a sudden, I go down one aisle, and they're like, all the candy you can get for a dollar. And they're like, movie theater style, Bunch of Crunch. I'm like, yoinks. And just grab one for a buck or whatever.
Yes.
Like, that's today I would still do that, because it's just, like, it incentivized me to buy popcorn, because if the popcorn's even even slightly warm, it just like, it like melts a little bit onto the popcorn.
Shut up. That sounds so good. Mm-hmm. That sounds so good right now.
I know. And so, like I said, we've already covered the BBs, but Butterfinger BBs were more of a standalone product. Like, I could eat those just by the handful. And I think we discussed this when we first covered. I think that was like that and Flintstones push-ups or something like that.
Yeah. Wild ride.
So random. But Butterfinger BBs, unlike normal Butterfingers, which is basically like, hey, do you want a small dagger worth of Butterfinger versus like, do you want like tiny little balls of Butterfinger? And somehow just that change, kind of like, you know, when Reese's peanut butter cups are shaped like Easter eggs or trees or whatever, they have like a different taste and texture to them and everything. Very much the case for Butterfinger BBs, and why I still swear by them and think it was a travesty that they were removed. Plus, the Simpsons commercials were so dope.
They were very good commercials.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So, but yeah, like, it's just, like I mentioned with the Nestle Crunch Bar, I was like, let's just say you open a bag knowing for sure there is one piece of candy in there. And you're like, you have to ask for one piece of candy. You're like, I want it to be this. And you open it up, it's a Crunch Bar. I know for a fact that is not the candy you said. But that's that being said, somehow they take this simple, mediocre candy bar and turn it into gold.
This really does seem like an amazing combination, because you've got the sweet and the crunch, which are my two favorite things together. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I had not thought about if the popcorn were hot enough that they would, when like cue Spice Girls, when two become one, like it's just this moment in time.
I will say
I'm so jealous of your childhood.
I mean, you say my childhood. Like, I'll shove a pack of those in my pocket and walk into a movie theater and just fucking go ham. But the problem is, like, if you go to a movie theater with these things, you need 47 napkins, because like, you will be a fucking mess by the end of it. Otherwise,
dog. Pro tip: baby wipes.
Pro tip: baby wipes. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get everything off everything.
I will say this, because of like COVID restrictions and stuff, they like stopped having it where you can just grab napkins out of the thing. So they give you this little tray that has like one napkin on it. And I'm just like, honey, I'm going to the bathroom and getting a shitload of paper towels, because this is not going to work for my buttered ass popcorn.
Yes.
But yeah, then like later on, so in the 90s, sadly, I had to pay full movie theater price for these, because like I said, that's all where they were available. And I was a child, and I couldn't drive to get them somewhere else. But but like in the early 2000s, especially like when I was able to actually go there with friends and stuff, you best believe I am going to a gas station nearby, because they started going to like gas stations, and I would always only seem to notice them when they were in the gas station that was near the near the movie theater. And I'm like, I know what you're doing, gas station, and I appreciate it.
I'm on to you.
Yeah, shove it in my pocket, shove it in a friend's purse, walk in there and be fucking king of the world. So, like I said, not to discredit them as a standalone snack, but I think just because I went to the theaters again and was so like. Anymore as an adult, like I'm just like, I just want an excuse to sit in the dark and eat popcorn and drink a really good, like a huge drink of soda.
Scientific fact, what? Popcorn in the dark has no calories.
Oh,
just that's I just true. Needed to make sure that all of our listeners were aware of this. I am a doctor of popcorn, and this is a fact.
The amount of popcorn that I can ingest in a single sitting at a movie theater is at least 5 times more than I could eat anywhere else.
Yes, no, it's true. We did. A friend of mine has a kid that has the same birthday as my eldest son. So in the last 2 weeks, we rented out a movie theater to watch Trolls. Yeah, it's like $100. You can bring, you know, you can space out 20 of your friends, and it's totally kosher. But like we did that, and I was like, I'll take your biggest popcorn. And I split it between my three kids. Well, I had my three kids plus a friend's kid. And I was like, all five of us are just going to like go nuclear on this popcorn. And we destroyed that bitch.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, the calories counted because the lights were off.
It doesn't count. Yeah. And usually like at our movie theaters, we'd have like the self-serve butter, which is
that's not acceptable.
When they invented that, like they knew, they were like, we're just giving up on humanity when we did this. Like, we know you're going to fucking destroy yourself. And we're officially okay with that.
Yep.
Now instead, since they don't let you use that because of COVID restrictions and stuff, they give you these little like plastic cups full of butter, like hot butter, just so you can. And it's cool because you put a whole bunch on the top of it, and then you eat a bunch, and then halfway through the movie, then you pour the other cup on the rest of it.
You are a genius. Well, I would have never. Okay, first of all, they haven't. I haven't seen. I've only been in the movie once during this whole thing, so I haven't experienced that. Mm-hmm. But wow.
I've only gone like at like 1 PM or whatever to like a movie that's not the most popular movie. So it'd be like me and 2 other people. And I was like, you understand, like I'm sitting as far away from you as possible so that I can live in my shame here. So do not come near me.
I've got a cup of hot butter, a 12-pound bag of popcorn. And also I bought my 25-bulk bag of Bunch of Crunch. restaurantsupply.com.
If you feel a bunch of crunch coming, I'm just gonna start chucking them at your head. I have far too many.
Oh my gosh, Andy, that is so good. Speaking of movies, I had my kids watch Rugrats the movie, Rugrats in Paris or whatever it was yesterday, and so we did the popcorn in the dark, and again, no calories, so it was a great afternoon.
I just can't imagine watching Nicktoons like or watching the Rugrats movie without. Watching it on the orange VHS.
Correct. And they had no context for who the kids were or what was happening. I was like, we're just going to go in dry. Yeah, we're going to figure out what happens. We're going to see what happens. No, you don't know the relationship between any of these people or why Chucky doesn't have a mom. We'll figure it out. Let's go.
Oh, God. But whatever episode it was that we went really deep in the paint on Chucky's dark childhood.
So brutal.
I don't know if it was Rugrats or what it was, but that was so great.
It's gnarly.
Anyways, so those are our things.
Those were great.
And yeah, I'm glad you guys are all back. Hopefully you've enjoyed it so far. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with your poll results from the end of season 3. I was going to say like 3 weeks ago. And then we're going to come back at you with a hot, hot court case.
Yes, we'll very buttery. Soon. Stay tuned.
Dust off your disc, man. Grab a Capri Sun. My name is Nassim, and this is Nostalgia. This podcast is the ultimate pop culture throwback, transporting us to the best decades of our time, the 90s and 2000s. Am I right? Some might say that I live with one foot in the past, but I can't help it. Being nostalgic and reminiscing is just part of my DNA. It's like my obsession with boy bands or Blockbuster, or still being upset over the fact that I haven't been slimed. So get cozy with your Cheetos or Doritos as we take a peek into my memory box and take it back. This is Nostalgia.
Welcome back from the break. Oh my gosh, this court case, I am so excited Oh my gosh, I am so excited. I am so excited. I just can't hide it. I'm not scared.
Lisa's about to lose control, and she thinks that she likes it. So
I do think I like it. But prior to that, we have to dig back 2 weeks.
I know. It's so long ago. I was like, oh, shit. When I was writing up the show notes, I was like, I got to dig real far through all the nonsense.
What the hell did we cover?
Yeah.
If you could recall, at the closing of season three, episode 75, we covered Speed versus Point Break, Keanu versus Keanu, buses versus surfing. Whoa versus whoa. Ready? So as if there was really any doubt, Facebook, 73% to 27% in favor of Speed. Twitter, 64.4% to 35.6% Speed. And Instagram coming in a little bit tighter at 59% to 41% also Speed. So Speed, the clear winner. Yay.
It feels like, and again, like this is on so many things over and over again, like close on Twitter and IG, and Facebook's just like, no, fuck that. Just go completely ham on something.
But you know, my buddy Christoph went to bat for Point Break. It was like, look, if you love Point Break, you love Point Break. This is a different kind of movie altogether. Yeah. I was like, nice. I'm glad people care enough. So, I don't know. But
agree.
That was...
It's the Foo Fighters Weezer. That's the one I always use as an example of that. If you love it, you absolutely love it. If you don't, then you probably like the other one. Just by default.
Yes, by default. Exactly. I honestly had never heard of Point Break prior to the court case. So I think it was probably just familiarity too. Everybody.
Yeah,
knew
I know.
Speed.
That's the thing is it's like, I know Speed. So that's the one I'm voting for.
And I like a challenge, but that was
too
season
much.
Three.
It's too much.
On to season four.
On to season four. And you know what that means? Time to make some sounds. Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum. Like that reverb.
That was good. And I don't want to be dark, Andy, but when you die, can I please put a request on your tombstone that there's an audio, like a button someone can press and it has you
it
doing
it. Just
a
has that. Like my family's like, man, we really love him for this and this and like all these other things he's done throughout his life. And they're like, well, sorry, the only interactive part of his tombstone is a 90s court reference. So
yep. So deal with that.
Lisa
and you
requested
can't even hear
it.
Just...
Sorry.
Yeah. Who? That's right. Lisa. Deal with it. So
did you say who?
This week, like,
oh, that's
well, I'm
the
sure
parents.
Your family being like who,
who is that? Okay, who so that? We decided, so we were kind of thinking, I was, you know, because I obviously we kind of do movie every other one, it seems like, or you know, every one or two or three, so we always like to start with something a little bit more unusual to start each season, so I was just thinking of, like, you know, not a movie, not TV, so maybe something a little bit different. So I was thinking of stores, and here's the thing. We thought of Blockbuster immediately because that's just such a huge thing that was such a huge part of the 90s. A lot of people probably are thinking like, hey, why didn't you do another movie store? You know, Borders isn't even the same thing. I think it was to get equally iconic stores that have since caved in colossal fashion that were like head of their game in their respective element. And so that's why we ended up picking Borders versus Blockbuster.
Borders,
time for books. Also, the word Blockbuster.
I am curious. So you're up first.
Uh-huh.
And I'm curious to hear about Borders. Because even though I know Borders was a totally separate thing, I'm like, oh, yeah, Barnes & Noble. It's like, no.
Yeah, I know. You think of the exact. Because like, you think of, like, because they're just like, hey, we're going to name all of the bookstores B's for just to make it a little bit harder to remember. So. Borders was founded in 1971, December 10th, until its eventual demise on September 28th of 2011, the day the Earth stood still. Now, often it's like, well, why are we covering this in 90s court? Because you know, if you know anything about Borders or bookstores or anything like that, like it was a fucking explosion in the 90s. Like it was, like they were like centered out of Michigan originally, and then. Like, they got a little bit bigger, and they were kind of in different little places and had some, like, smaller stores. And then, like, in the 90s, it was just, oh, my gosh, they just popped up everywhere. So, before the end of the 90s, Borders had over 1,000 stores bearing the Borders or Walden Books name. And we'll get into that later regarding the Walden's book portion.
Okay.
which is notable because today, with it being like the biggest and only game in the show, Barnes & Noble, which is by far the biggest winner of the Book Wars, has 627 stores. So just to briefly imagine that this Borders and Walden Books had a bigger foothold back at the end of the 90s than Barnes & Noble does now, basically controlling the entire game.
Interesting.
I will say Borders is worldwide, so that is a worldwide count, whereas Barnes & Noble is U.S. only. So, Borders was massive, and yes, that also includes Walden Books. So, what was Borders, huh? So, obviously it was a bookstore, but like, sure, there's tons of bookstores. But Borders for me was always, I considered it to be like the big boy bookstore.
Like, yes.
It was, there were like small time bookstores, like as a kid I didn't really go to because like, you know, like my parents were like, hey, we want to take you to the fanciful place of imagination, like to go like to find things. And there were other ones like, you know, like besides this, there's, you know, the Pages for All Ages and smaller Barnes and Noble at the time. But mm-hmm. nothing was quite like the size, selection, and random extra bullshit-wise of Borders.
Like puzzles and shit?
I do have it in the notes here, and I want to say that Borders was literally like going to a Scholastic Book Fair, like, except you could just go there anytime.
Yes. Oh my gosh, you're exactly right.
You have everything you get from a Scholastic Book Fair, of course, but I will say they did have all the extra bullshit. There was adult stuff that you didn't want like mixed in there, so you had to kind of know where to look. But there was always that huge kids section where like feels like they have like toys and like they have like fake like trees up and shit. Like, I don't know, I've been to different ones where they're like, it's like a very magical like area or whatever with like all of this, like, you know, a lot of designs and artwork and stuff in there. But yeah, you could get anything from books to posters to music, dope bookmark pens, dope bookmarks, pens, pencils, fancy erasers, toys, you know, just every random bullshit you can imagine from Borders. So basically, let's see. I wanted to skip. I was going to repeat the Scholastic Book Fair facts. Let's see. Here's the thing. I think for me, what was crazy because I assume a lot of the times when I go to things that they've just been around for a while, like, and I think like when I first started going to Borders, cause like my parents would take me there, especially because there was a period of time where I was getting really into Redwall. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Redwall books, but those are Brian Jakes, who wrote a large, long series of various, kind of like fantasy books where it's rodents and various animals and stuff like that are the characters. Very good books, very good writing. And I actually got a couple of books signed by him at a signing for a new bookstore that was opening up too.
Dang.
So like, because of that, we were at these places. And so like, I thought like, wow, I can't believe these things have been here for so long. But in actuality, like looking at the timeline, I'm like, it probably was built like that year that I was there getting these books, because that's like, and they were just like, it was like the newest everything. Like everything was perfect condition. Like, no matter what bookstore you go to, even today, it's like you walk in there and everything, the layout, the design, the way that tables are set up with the books and stuff like that, and they know exactly where to place all this shit. And like I said, the big kids section, which is a totally different thing. They have like young adult section. There's so many different, they do so much more than just say, here's a product, buy it and get the fuck out of the store, you know?
Yes.
And that's still something. And again, I know that's a lot more to do just with bookstores in general, but Borders, like, especially then, because that was my experience of a brand new huge bookstore and just being blown away by it when I first went there, and the several times that I did get taken there as a kid. And I mean, even later on, I mean, because like I said, I was here for quite a while even after that. But it's a pretty rad thing. So let's talk about a little bit of a breakdown of a Borders timeline from their existence.
Yes. Yes.
So... 1971, they open up a used bookstore in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So they just have one little one on campus there. So the people who owned it developed some kind of software, which again, 1970s was pretty early, but they developed software that helped them project sales and manage inventory, which gave them a huge leg up on competition. So essentially, as opposed to other ones where they're like, you know what? I hope that this is right. I think this book's going to sell 400 copies, so I'm buying 400. Whoops, it sold 10. You know, so they, for some reason, had some software that could calculate a lot of this shit that helped them make profit and keep inventory the correct amounts and everything very well. And apparently, even into the 90s, that software, I'm sure they upgraded it somewhat, but like, it still was stuff that other people were like, fuck, I wish we had that, because it's apparently a very effective method.
How interesting.
So, yeah. But again, it was still small time. They had, obviously, they'd open up some chain stores, but they were nothing big at that point. So in 1988, the company hired a guy. I didn't even write his name next. Like, you don't, nobody cares about this guy's name. So,
fuck you, guy.
Basically, he took over as like with leadership and expansion, and that's the reason that the Borders ended up blowing the fuck up starting in the 90s. So, starting in 1991, Borders is like, hey, gang, you know, I know we sell books. What if we sold like music and movies and stuff too?
Yes.
And
yes.
So they're like, oh, okay. So that way, like, if someone comes in here and they're like, you know, okay, well, I'm here for books, but like Jerry doesn't give a shit about books. Like, he can go like get a CD or something like that, or go grab a flick or something. So, in the 1992, Kmart Corporation, which immediately instills confidence in you. I don't know if you were near Kmart or had any Kmarts in your town, but
I did.
Yeah,
briefly.
So I hear Kmart, and I'm just like, oh no. So, so evidently they already owned Walden Books at this point.
Kmart did?
Yeah. So in 1992, they owned them. So they bought Borders, and they, within their company, made the Borders Walden Group. At this time, Borders had about 21 huge stores and some smaller ones, but hadn't really exploded yet. So it's still not huge at that point. I think they say large stores like superstores, and then they had like a lot of smaller ones in different places, just not like what you think of as a Borders, like the huge ones like on the corner that take up like, you know, like a fucking dance studio. I don't know why I use dance studio as a point of reference for size.
You
but
know,
here we
it
are.
Just works. It just works. Yeah.
So Borders Group, which is what became called for the Borders Walden Group, basically those two stores spun off from Kmart. They're like, listen, Kmart, we think it's really cool that you bought us out and everything like that. We are going to go, though. So thanks so much. We love you.
LOL.
And so then they became a publicly traded company on the New York Stock Exchange. And even then, at the time, like, everybody still thought their inventory system was so fucking dope. Like, they even said, like, other stores were just like, we literally are never going to get a leg up on them until we get something like that. Fortunately, they got out of there because, as many of us know, Kmart would go out of business in 2002. So, I don't know why. I think it was because, like, not a lot of businesses, like, huge businesses had gone out of business yet at that point. That, like, it sticks out in my memory the most as the most notable one, because it was, like, the first blow of many to come for the next, like, decade.
Yes.
So, 1995 to 1998, that whole period of time was just, like, that is basically the time frame when every Borders basically that you've ever known was constructed exploded onto the scene. So just cities all over. I mean, like, we're talking, like I said, it went from like in the, like I said, I didn't get exact numbers, but the 21 big stores and a lot of smaller stores. But now they're looking at just huge stores all over the U.S. and then eventually in other countries. Just everywhere. I mean, so obviously, like, and especially like a brand new store opens like that. Like with a bookstore, like fucking everybody is going there to check out like their grand opening and everything like that. So, so several hundred Borders were opened up between them and Walden Books, of course. Let's see. And then in 1998, they launched Borders.com, which is their first and only online presence. I'll end it there as there's a lot that happened in the 2000s, but we'll touch on that later. So needless to say, in the 1990s, like I said, I mentioned about, so back then, like in the late 90s, not only was I getting into the Redwall books, but also like that was when Accelerated Reader was a big thing. I don't know if you guys had that at your school, but essentially that was part of school where, like, in addition to like your classwork, you also had to get X amount of points worth of books. And so like each book would be assigned like a value. And so, like, you could read, like, one really complicated or heavy book for, like 50 points or something like that. Or you could read a fucking garbage book for, like, 5 points. But those are super short.
Clifford the Big Red Dog.
read a fuckload of Clifford. So, so a lot of different books that I was getting into because I wanted an excuse to go to that store, because I went once and I'm like, this is fucking rad. And, so I'd go there and start buying some books as well that I still probably have to this day hidden in a dark passage somewhere. But yeah, so then eventually you would read them and then you would take a quiz on them, like on a computer or whatever, and it would test your understanding of the book, which was really a bummer because I remember I read like a super complex book. I think I read Oliver Twist at some point.
That's pretty intense.
It was like in seventh grade or something like that. And I think I got like a 70% on the test or something like that. I needed like a 75, but then they were like, this was worth so many points. Like, and he was so close that they gave it to me, but man, that would have sucked if I missed out on all my points for that semester. Mm-hmm. So let's see. So a few things about why exactly it is that Borders didn't go so well eventually, right? I mean, a lot of people be like, oh, it's bookstores, but I mean, why did Barnes & Noble exist still, right? Is it that those two had such different trajectories where Barnes & Noble is crushing it still? Crushing it's a relative term. Let's not go with that. They're doing pretty well.
They have a pulse.
Yes, they have a pulse.
Currently. Yeah.
So here's the few things as to Borders' downfall. So Borders originally had a huge advantage due to the size/square footage of its stores. So they would like have these fucking massive stores because they're like, hey, if we just have the biggest collection of books and music and everything, everybody's going to come here because they can't get the shit other places.
Yeah.
Which is great. Until it's the early to mid 2000s where people are not going to bookstores so much because they're starting to sell them online or, you know, various things like that. So suddenly they have a fuckload of books that nobody's buying, right?
Yeah.
So they have all this stuff, and I'm guessing, I don't know if they paid rent or lease or whatever, but like, I can't imagine it was cheap to maintain a place that big. So in the late 90s and early 2000s, Borders thought, like, their owners and stuff were like, I know what we need to do. We need to go heavy as fuck into the CD and DVD game. Because they were like, we've already got that, and people seem to like it, so we're going to double down on that. And they're like, well, hey, isn't there, like, a lot of this digital stuff and everything online, like, that people are starting to get into? And they're like, fuck that. People love CDs and DVDs. We're going to get just a fuckload of them. And they just sunk.
People are always going to want physical
media. People
are
always
going
to like this, and nothing's ever going to change. So basically they were like a 60-year-old who doesn't understand, who's like, I love my flip phone. So
that doesn't sound like 60-year-olds.
Yeah, so they love their flip phone. So anyways.
They do.
Meanwhile, at the exact same time, Barnes & Noble was like, you know what, maybe we need to start offering like less of that stuff. So they actually were cutting back on a lot of their physical media. So Barnes & Noble, meanwhile, started investing in its online sales and even started offering its own ebook reader, the Nook. So like, you know, when the Kindle and everything came around, they're like, fuck, well, we got to have some sort of a response. Whereas Borders is like, that's cute. We're good. But thanks so much for playing. So,
oh my gosh.
So instead, after that happened, Borders is like, we know what people want. And then they like expanded their physical business, like their physical store, like their plants that made books and stuff like that. And whatever they did, they made more of them. Like they made more. We need more books is what we need.
Oh no.
I don't know. It was so many missteps here.
But it sounds right. Like it's like, I mean, no, there will always be book nerds, and there will be, but not to the extent that there used
to
be.
I mean, that's the thing is like, it really feels like a lot of the times it's like you're betting on like when you think like, because in retrospect, sure, it's easy to say, wow, what idiots. But like, we didn't know if MP3s were going to be really like that big of a thing or whatever, or like, you know, various digital things like ebook readers. Like I still don't like ebook readers.
Yeah, same. I don't either.
But so they just are kind of like, we're going to bet that our current system is still going to work. So eventually the biggest thing that I think is just amazing to me. So Amazon, for those of you who may not remember, if you're listening to the show, you probably do. Amazon was actually a bookstore. Was not an everything store. And at this time, like when this was happening, Amazon was very much a bookstore. So Borders was like, okay, fine. I guess we'll sell some shit online. But we're not going to sell it on our website. We're going to just let Borders sell our books. No, we're going to let Amazon, I'm sorry, Amazon sell our books. So what? They literally used Amazon as a source to sell their books.
Oh,
just
no.
To get rid of them, I guess. But they're literally saying, hey, customers, go to Amazon to buy our books.
Gosh, Borders.
The complete lack of foresight of that is unfathomable. To just say, like, we are going to make nothing from these online sales. We just want to get rid of some books and also go to Amazon. It'll be so convenient.
You'll love how easy it is to go to our competitor to buy our digital books or to buy our physical books without coming into our store. We're going to make it.
Yep.
You're not going to make it.
We're going to make it. Come here whenever you want some coffee.
So it's not even the good stuff. It was Seattle's Best. That's trash. It's trash.
I was going to say, like, I think it was pretty like early in the 2000s. I think they had a thing with Starbucks that they had for
Was that not Barnes & Noble, or was it Borders that had it?
Borders had it for a while, yeah. I mean, they probably lost it to Barnes & Noble's later.
Yes, they did.
So they had little to no online presence. They were doubling down on physical books, CDs, and DVDs. Like your dad, like I said, like dad, who's like, my flip phone's fine. It's 2021. I love my flip phone. Uh-huh. And of course, Barnes & Noble and Amazon are both crushing it because they're adapting. So 2006 was the last year that Borders turned a profit.
Ooh.
And basically would just be like just bucketing out water out of their sinking boat for the next 5 years. Like, and the thing is they tried. They tried a lot of different stuff to adapt, but it was just like they just bet so much on something that like trying to turn it around and make a profit was so difficult at that point, because everybody else was like light years ahead of them at that point. So it's so weird to me, like, still, like, thinking of the way that Borders closed and everything like that, that hurt me. I remember when I heard the news, like, I was like, man, that sucks. I was like, well, at least Barnes & Noble is still here or whatever, you know, and some other smaller stores. I mean, I will say this. I live in a small town. We have a local bookstore that's really small, and I love it, and it's super cool, and the people are awesome and super fun there. But it's crazy to me to think that, like, back in the 90s, we were bemoaning, like, the malls taking over and ruining local businesses and Borders, you know, like places like Borders kicking out like the small time guys, like fast food restaurants or like casual chain restaurants taking over other businesses. And now we're bemoaning those businesses dying, the ones that took over all the other ones, which is so wild to me.
That's a very good way to put it. Yeah.
In like 10
Amazon
years.
Has just taken everything.
Yeah. Just how quickly everything changed in such a period of time, like that they had such, like, it's crazy to think that, like, every business, like, pretty much, like, you got to make a lot of money in, like, 4 to 10 years tops because it's going to be gone. Like, so, like, even if you crush it, like, even if you're the best business out there, it's going to be gone somehow.
Yep.
So now, don't get me wrong. Barnes & Noble fucking rules. I will say that. I am a fan of Barnes & Noble's. I've actually gone there a few times. I went twice actually during the pandemic, just, you know, earlier on. Just that was one of the few places I actually went to go buy some things that were not quote unquote necessary.
Yes. Yeah.
But mainly it's because I'm a fan of bookstores, but I didn't go to a ton of them, mainly because I live in a small town and it is quite a drive from my hometown. So whenever I was a kid though, like obviously, you know, it's not something where we just swing over and go there. So, like, my parents weren't just going to take me to the bookstore, like, every day or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but every time I did, I know this sounds weird, but it was, like, it was genuinely, like, a fucking magical feeling in those places. Like, and I know that sounds gross and hurts my soul to even say that, but, like,
it
was just an environment at bookstores, even now still, I mean, that is so much different than every other business out there, because it is intentionally designed to make you say, I want to stay here. And it's such a rare thing these days to have that as part of the vibe in a place. You know, I mean, obviously there's like bars and stuff like that. Maybe they're designed for that too, but like, you know, but for something like that, where it's literally just buying products, it's especially as a kid, I guess it was just cool seeing all of these amazing books and everything and all the accessories that come with them and different things. So I don't know. I know that's a weird thing, but it's still sticks with me, just remembering those moments and standing, yeah, like standing in line waiting to get my book signed by Brian Jakes, who was the writer of the Red Ball series and everything like that, and just all these really cool memories of like the times that I did go there, because it was, you know, just a super cool place to be. So anyways, that's my reminiscing on Borders. We miss you, we love you, bye.
We miss you. Yeah, my dad is
we miss
a
you. Bye.
Thank you, we miss you, please come back. Woohoo. My dad is a huge book nerd fan. He mm-hmm. loves books. He buys so many books at once. It's insane. And we would always go, because he lived in Dallas and I lived in Corsicana. We would drive and we would like spend the weekend with him and go. We would inevitably end up at a Borders or Half Price Books. But it was when it was Borders, it was like an hour and a half thing every time, which mm-hmm. is really long for a kid that is not
absolutely
like an excited reader. And so I would always, my memories of Borders were always going to the astrology section and grabbing, mm-hmm. you know, an astrology book and being like, oh, I'm such a Cancer, and sitting down and reading about astrology at the, like one of the little chairs or plastic tables or something. And like, just, and you know, for 45 minutes of being like, which celebrity are they saying I am similar to personality wise in this book, you know, or something. And that was my childhood growing up.
It's always so nice to be reminded just how different we are when you say shit like that. I'm like, oh yeah,
I know.
Different gender.
Very
for
different.
Sure.
Very different. Very different folk. But I mean, for me, it was always fun. I was the kid that liked going through the music section as well, but they never had, I mean, CDs were never cheap. But you didn't feel bad if you spent $9.99 or $12.99 on a CD. At Borders, I felt like the baseline was $17.99 and up.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's steep, y'all. I cannot talk my dad into an $18 CD of like Corn while I'm here. So I'm just going to have to like, I'm just going to have to just, you know, look
something
at the astrology
about getting
books.
A Corn CD at a Borders feels so wrong.
But doesn't it just like feel so right?
Yeah, it feels so right. It's just it such a so weird right. opposite vibe of a Borders.
But you're like walking around. I mean, it's a very weird time. And yeah, it's like, do I want the Sheryl Crow CD? Or I'm pretty sure I want Korn. But they've got a lot of Dixie Chicks right now. And I don't know what's happening in my life. But Borders was it was fun. I have a very soft spot for it too. Borders was fun. The cafe was always enjoyable. And like you said, it was an experience. And for people mm-hmm. who were tried and true book people, that was a super fun place to be.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It's like going to a museum or something like that. Like, it's an experience. the museum was a bad comparison. That's like, oh, look at these fossils of ancient civilizations books. But
right.
Anyways, tell me about Blockbuster.
All right. Blockbuster. Guys, this is, I mean, ooh, Blockbuster. Guys, think back to your like most amazing weekends from your childhood, okay? If Friday mm-hmm. evening after school, maybe before dinner, if it didn't start with a trip to Blockbuster, ooh, it wasn't going to be a good weekend. But if you knew Blockbuster was baked in, it was, no, you're like, no, this weekend's going to be shit. But if you get Blockbuster on a Friday, you know this weekend is going to be insane. Blockbusters came with pizza parties. Blockbusters came with sleepovers. Blockbusters came with cousins staying over. Blockbusters came with birthday parties. Blockbusters were just like, they were just the best. Like, Blockbuster meant that you were going to get to do something that you wanted to do mm-hmm. as the kid for like at least an hour. And if your parents were really busy that weekend, maybe you got to watch that one movie four times in 48 hours or something like that. But it was just like, oh, some of my favorite memories growing up were like walking around the interior, looking at the VHS tapes on the shelf. And like, I mean, talking about Borders, talking about Blockbuster, this may be the most deeply nostalgic dump of mm-hmm. an episode that we will ever do, I think.
It's so experiential, like, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It cannot be recreated. Like, I feel so sad for children who were born in like 99, because you may have like one or two memories of going into a video rental store, but that's it. Like, anything past that, you have no idea what I'm talking about. You can watch videos of it on YouTube and be like, what are you talking about? Why don't you just go to Netflix? Bitch, Netflix wasn't around in 96. We had to go out of our car, go into the store, talk to people, pay money, and watch a movie. and then bring it back 2 days later, or we got fined. It was a whole thing. Man,
it's still wild to think about late fees not existing anymore.
I know. Movies just fly at you. Like, I had no idea I was even going to be interested in watching this series, and here we are, and it's been, you know, 11 hours later, and you finished the whole thing, and you didn't pay anything more than $9 a month.
You know what I think? I think the new late fees is forgetting to cancel your trial.
The trial of
a service.
I had a premium Spotify trial go get up on me this week, and I was like, oh fuck, I forgot about that, and I had to cancel it anyway. But so, like, you get to go in, you're walking around, you're like checking out the front of the movie boxes and like taking a look at the pictures and seeing who's in it and hoping that there was a copy available behind it to take home, especially if it was like a new release or something. So, like, you would be stalking the aisles of movies like a wolf, like checking out the new releases and like hoping that perhaps your parents were, you know, thinking that perhaps maybe you're old enough to watch Silence of the Lambs, but knowing in your heart that you're going to be leaving with Tiny Toon Adventures, How I Spent My Vacation, for the fifth time this year. That's what you were going to be doing this weekend. And like, I'm just quickly, like, I'm walking through the experience of this, and then we'll get into the backstory of Blockbuster. But like, you pick out what you want from the shelf, you clutch it in your hands while you're like, and for some reason your dad is taking like 6 hours to like check out the Western section. So you're just like aimlessly wandering about the store and watching the movies up on the big screens that they have and listening to the trailers, and like, you're guarding this copy of Tiny Toon Adventures with your fucking life.
Did they have movies playing in those stores?
Yeah, they would have the TVs hanging down. Oh, yeah, okay. They had TVs in Blockbuster. So we've talked about this offline.
Yeah.
And I think in the show in the past, Blockbuster was not something... Yeah, Andy has not grown up with Blockbuster. Did you ever go into one?
I feel like I have been into a Blockbuster, especially like if I was like on a trip somewhere or something like that, and I needed a movie to watch or something. But no, I feel like I've been there, but it was probably like, shoot, like I was probably like in college at that point. Like, I don't think I ever went as a kid.
Wow. Yeah, it was awesome. And it was so bright in there, and they have pop, and it smelled like it has a particular smell, and all the employees were in bright blue and yellow polos with khakis, and like, it was just an experience. It is an experience unto itself that cannot be recreated. It was just something, and I feel so, like, I genuinely feel sad for newer generations that they did not get this.
Yeah, and I mean, it all, honestly, like, I know for a fact that what I just said about me not having been to a Blockbuster till I was, like, in college probably hurt a lot of people's hearts, but, like, it was just Monticello, small town. We had two small video stores. It was a whole different experience. Obviously, there was no movies showing or anything like that, but yeah, those had their own really cool experiences. And then if we did ever go to Champaign to get something because they had more selection, it was Family Video. So that's why I'm just don't have the experience, sadly.
Yeah. And like, we had a Movie Land in my hometown, and that was like a little local thing. And I remember going there with my dad. There was I grilled his brain this morning to be like, what was the name of the movie theater? Like, there was a different rental store we would go to. He couldn't remember, but Blockbuster ended up being the main game in town, as it did for many other people. Of course, Corsicana is like a pretty far, like an hour away from Dallas suburb, mm-hmm. and Blockbuster started in Dallas, but we'll get to that in a second. But like, it just was an experience. The movie return box. Oh, it was just so much. And like, they had candy. They had huge selections of candy and popcorn as you're checking out. And oh, it was such a whole thing.
I'm looking at this Blockbuster, just this picture that came of one of the first ones. It's like a bunch of bags of Doritos and then like movie style theater candy and stuff like that.
You could go in there at like 5:45, busy as fuck. Pick out the movie you want, walk around, kind of experience, take your snacks. You know, if you've got a significant other, they pick out something. Maybe you're like, well, you know, I have something together. Maybe you get into a little fight and you pick, but like, but then you just, maybe you break up at Blockbuster. Fuck, people do that, I swear. But
it story was took just a dark so, turn.
It took, yeah, maybe you stab your significant other because they don't want to watch Love Actually, you know, or I don't know. But, and like, I'm telling you, Andy, that I didn't feel like an adult. I had my driver's license. I've gone to college at that point, but I didn't feel like an adult until I opened my own Blockbuster account. Yep. Once I had my own blue card, I was like, I do not need a mother or father. I'm an independent woman. So that's some of the experience of that. We'll get a little bit more into that again, but I really want to talk about the backstory real quick. So Blockbuster was started by a man named David Cook. He's a guy out of Dallas, Texas. And his wife was like, we should get into the video biz, question mark. And
seems fair.
And yeah. And he had bought a small chain in Dallas called Video Works and wanted to make it all blue and yellow inside. And they were like, get the fuck out of here. And he said, okay, bye. And he's like, I'm going to start my own movie rental store where we can have all the blue and yellow that we want. So he let go of Video Works and opened the first Blockbuster in 1985 in Dallas, Texas. And it started with 6,000 VHS tapes and 2,000 beta tapes, which is even beyond my realm of expertise, and shortly led to a $6 million warehouse being built in Garland, Texas, which is a suburb of Dallas. So soon several other stores were built, and many of them were acquired by a dude named Wayne Huizenga. I think I did that right. Huizenga? That's probably right. Who's the guy?
It's Huizenga.
Is it right? Is that right?
I haven't even seen it spelled, but like I know so many people with it. They spell it different ways, but it's always Huizenga.
Interesting. Okay, well, we'll say Wayne Huizenga, the co-founder of Waste Management, and then his associate there, John Milk, joined up with him, and they started buying out a lot of these smaller movie stores in the area to kind of dominate the market. And then in 1989, they were sued by Nintendo as Nintendo tried to stop them from entering the like rental of video game world. But Nintendo lost, and video game rentals was born because of this whole thing.
Was it just that they didn't like the idea of some one person buying it and then making profiting off of the video game?
I don't know.
Now that you mention it, like I would have never thought of that being an issue, but that makes sense now. Totally.
I know. I even during my show notes, I was like, LOL, Nintendo. But as I was saying, I was like, wait a minute.
It's just like, I mean, yeah, it's like when stuff is just unprecedented, you're like, I mean, it's like, sure they do it with movies, but you can't just do it with, like, that's crazy.
It is so wild. It's so wild. I don't know. Along with the video game rental thing, I'm kind of buzzing through this because there's more to talk about than just this stuff. In the early 90s, concerns about cable and video on demand programming came up, and Blockbuster weighed their options but decided against buying some cable companies and whatnot. Side note, they apparently had an idea for a 2,500-acre Blockbuster Sports and Amusement Park in Florida, which would have been dope. But I mean,
what would it have been?
Probably, like I was thinking about it, it probably would have been akin to something like Universal Studios because it is about movies and stuff like that. And so in my head, I was just like, maybe that's what they were going for. But like, it could have been so cool, but it just didn't work out and probably for the best, because it would have been embarrassing to have this huge amusement park and be like, never mind, the whole thing that this is based on is dead.
We made it to Six totally Flags dead. Now.
It's Six Flags over VHS tapes. So when Wang Huizenga couldn't figure out the best way to protect Blockbuster from these impending threats, he sold Blockbuster to Viacom in 1994. And DVD sales were becoming a new thing at this time. So Warner Brothers approached Blockbuster in 1997 and offered then CEO John Antiocco an exclusive rental deal with Warner Brothers, which would have given Blockbuster the rights to rent new DVD releases for an extended period of time before they went to sale to the public. And Blockbuster said, no, dumbass. As a result, Warner Brothers just started selling their DVDs at a lower wholesale price, and Walmart then stepped in and gobbled up DVD market. Yeah. I'll take your scraps. We're Walmart. We're like the angry rat of all markets. Like, we'll take whatever nobody else wants. So the story of Blockbuster and its downfall is basically a story of a business turning down a lot of opportunities to save itself. But none of those missteps were as big as the one that they took in 2000, where they turned down the chance to buy Netflix for $50 million. I could have bought Netflix.
Well, to be clear, Lisa, you could.
I don't have $50 million, but I could have talked to a banker like really nicely. I probably could have bought Netflix. Listen,
I have been to the future, and I know this is going to work out. So just give me the fucking loan.
Give me, Give me the money. Give me the money. Also in 2004, Viacom parted ways with Blockbuster at the same time that Blockbuster launched Blockbuster Online. And that is also the same time that Blockbuster was like, we're losing to Redbox. We're losing to Netflix. And you know why? Because we're charging late fees. No more late fees. Well, wow. Late fees were a tremendous part of their revenue stream. And so as a result, they just kicked the bucket of money out from underneath themselves. And over time, with the coming up of technology and video streaming platforms, Blockbuster's franchises began closing quickly and rapidly. And sadly, to this day, There is only one left. It is in Bend, Oregon.
And so they had that big, I didn't watch it yet, but everybody keeps saying it's great. It's the documentary, The Last Blockbuster on Netflix.
I love documentaries. That documentary sucks. I don't like that documentary. Really? Because it just got boring. Like in the middle of it, I can't remember that comedian's name, but it ended up just being more about that guy talking. I was like, this isn't interesting. I actually just want to go back to talking about Blockbuster. I don't give a fuck what this comedian has to say. I just want to keep talking about Blockbuster. But it was interesting because that one is the only one standing. And of course, there's this huge like cult following around it. People want to support it. In fact, Andy, I read just this evening that in 2020, I believe they for three nights allowed their Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon to be rented out as an Airbnb. They set up a TV and like a 90s themed couch with 90s themed bedding and like VHS tapes and made it like a living room kind of separated but also part of the movie store, and you could sleep in the Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon.
That's
Can you
like,
imagine?
That would make so much more money than an actual movie store is just
they
like.
Do you know how much they charge a night for, Andy? $4. Four single dollars. If you gave them a $5, they'd have to give you change back to stay.
Oh my God.
Why would you do? I mean, like, I'm sure it was just because it was like a fun promotional thing, but like, make some money, bitch. Make some money. Well, do you know what's happening?
Like, people would pay money to go there. Like, just like, it's like, it is some one of those things where like, people will go to fucking Bend, Oregon, like to do that.
Yeah. And I just listen for I've read so much. I cannot tell you what it like. If you didn't experience Blockbuster as a kid, I'm so sorry. If you did, you know exactly how good it felt to walk in from like, especially coming in from Texas in the summer. The parking lot is hot. And it's like stinky because of the crickets flying everywhere because of the bright parking lot lights. And then you get inside and it's a cold blast of air conditioned air, sweet smell of like popcorn and candy, bright lights everywhere. The movie that the employees have chosen to play is just playing. There are people there, there are kids there, families there, everyone's like just touching shit, and then you're touching shit, and COVID hasn't happened yet, so none of that is weird. It's just like, it was just the best. And then you pick out a movie, and if you're lucky, you get two, and if you're really crazy, maybe your family's full of film fanatics, and you go home with like 5 or 10 movies, but it was the best. And then there was like a previously watched movie bin, and you could just buy some fucking pre-owned DVDs or pre-watched DVDs, Be Kind, Rewind, like, oh, it was such a thing.
Oh my God, just the reminder, like, that sentence is used so much, Be Kind, Rewind, but the actual reality of the fact that for a large portion of my life, I would get charged fees if I did not rewind my tapes still blows my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And they would charge you. And in fact, I believe I read that Netflix was founded by a guy, I don't remember his name off the top of my head, out of spite because he had gotten a $40 late fee from Blockbuster. And he was like, nuh-uh. And then he just destroyed the entire genre of it's a story of how Netflix was started. And then Blockbuster was offered Netflix on a silver platter, and they said, nay, no thank you, sir. We would rather
it's just
die.
Like the parallels between our
It's unreal. Why so many bad decisions?
I mean, again, it's
guys.
One of those things that's so easy in 2020, you know. Just in retrospect to say,
yeah,
you know, Monday morning quarterback, like, wow, you should have known. But like, I mean, still, like, I didn't get a smartphone for ages because I just didn't think it was going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so many different things that like, you just don't no, you don't get it or don't understand like why it would be a thing until it is a thing, you know, and it's just you just don't know that it's going to be a thing until it happens. So
I can't possibly fathom what could be next. I can't. But we've already seen in our lifetime, we're only 35, we've seen a lot of medium erased, like VHS tapes, cassette tapes, CDs. Mm-hmm. I mean, those things are still out there, but they're not what people like if an album is released, no one's going out and buying the CD. Not very many people are, certainly some are, but we're going to YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, you know, whatever we do, like we're listening to it digitally. I will pay $11 for a digital album or something like that just to own the rights to have it at home.
It's still weird to me because I haven't bought a CD and so I haven't bought an album of any kind in so long that I was thinking, I was like, man, if there was actually an album I really wanted, I probably would buy the CD. Like, and I just was like, I don't know if that's true. Like, I just haven't thought about that because it's never come up. Yeah. And I realized I'm like, I'm not going to use a CD player for it. So I don't know why I would think that.
Right. And it's just, I don't know. But this was just a very particular moment in time from like an 80s and 90s kid world. Like, really think about it, Andy. Blockbuster's heyday was really just from the early 90s-ish to mid-2000. Like, it died pretty hard. I mean, that's only about 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, like,
of like this glorious thing that occurred, and then it's just gone.
I mean, it must have been somewhat in the 80s too, because of the fact that I know, like, at least this is 100% based on a Marvel film. But never mind. I was gonna say Captain Marvel, when she fell out of the sky, she crashed into a fucking Blockbuster or whatever, and that was like a very notable thing in the movie. And that was
the
80s,
first one. Yeah, the first, well, I mean.
Where was it?
Yeah, they were, the first one was 85, and 89 was when Nintendo started trying to sue them. So they must have had it, they ramped up pretty quickly. But yeah, I would say from like a national standpoint, probably early 90s.
Yeah, I wasn't sure when that time frame was on that Nintendo thing, because I was like, sure they could, because like I was thinking, like, by the time I was 6 or 7, like, we were renting video games, like, for sure. So I know it had to be, so apparently it was in the late 80s. So that makes
late
80s. Sense.
Yeah, but man, it just was. And the story, I found this Reddit post of people talking about, like, if you were a Blockbuster employee, can you please talk to us about what it was like, and the stories people had were hilarious. Like, one guy said that, like, he got stuck on a few shifts of, like, 40-hour weeks, you know, straight. And he was like, I just fucking played Hot Rod nonstop for 3 weeks and no one said anything. You can just play. And, like, the stories that they had of, like, people calling in and wanting a recommendation for a movie. And, you know, you don't get that. You can't, I mean, you can talk to Netflix and be like, I want a recommendation for a documentary. Well, it's just going to give you one big splat full of stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, it can kind of understand algorithmically what you kind of like, but it's not like talking to a person and being like, man, I really loved this director. And they're like, okay, yeah, try this guy. Or, you know, seeing your rental history and being like, hey, I've seen you watched a bunch of Steven Seagal movies, you big weirdo. How about
this? Like, if somebody's, you know, looking through my rental history, I got a problem with that. I'm like, don't look at my stuff.
Don't do that. Don't do that, fam. And and also Blockbuster had a very, like a hard line for no pornography. So nothing like that. Mm-hmm. They never had like a soft core section or anything like that. If you wanted that, you had to go to whatever was in Monticello, like, or whatever.
I mean, it's sad to say, but it is definitely did have like a little like closet that was like literally beaded, just that small selection of that. Yeah.
Yeah. But man, it just, the stories that employees had, like, they were like, it was such a wonderful thing, even though I'm sure it was very maddening because people were gross and would like vomit or pee in the return movie slot. But like, there was something magical about what was happening inside that store. And I'm sure it was annoying, you know, as someone who never worked there, but the people who did get to work there said it was like the best experience of their life.
Oh, for sure. Like, and I had even friends who worked at our local stores, like, that was like the job to have, but it was so hard to get, 'cause like high schoolers would like love that shit and just hang on to it as long as they could.
Exactly. But that's Blockbuster. I would love to hear people's memories of Blockbuster. I would love to hear people's memories of Borders. Like, these are two very strong sense memories of things that you got to do.
I do feel happy to know that like, because here's like one difference between Blockbuster and Borders is that like Blockbuster, like, I feel like when it was coming to its end and stuff like that, like the past several years, like, it was a place that like went down in quality and appearance like real bad. Like you could go in the place like sticky floors, like, cause it feels like all of a sudden, like, they're not employing great people anymore. Like, they're probably, like, you know, not taking care of the places as good and everything like that. And fortunately, I don't think Borders went to that kind of decline, you know, because it's still just a bookstore. So it's not like, you know, but it was, it's almost like you don't want to see them suffer and go through pain like you had to watch Blockbuster go through in its final years.
Exactly. Yeah, Blockbuster, they had some rough goes, but boy, when they started going out of business, the amount of movies that fucking scooped up, whoop, whoop.
I'll tell you this, like, when it was going out of business, like, I mean, like, everybody knew it was, like, in trouble and stuff like that, but, like, nobody thought a thing of it until the news came and it was finally gone, and then several years later, all of a sudden, we're like, how could this have happened? And you didn't think about them for a decade. Don't act like you're surprised that they're gone.
Exactly.
So, anyways.
But that's Blockbuster. That was a long episode, but, you know, season four coming back with a big bang. So, Andy,
let me take us out, baby. Where to find us? Check us out at 90s Court on Facebook and Twitter. Get your votes in this week to check out Facebook on Monday in particular. Twitter, I'll probably have it out Tuesday or Wednesday for the poll. You'll have a little bit more time there. And Instagram at 90s.court. You're going to want to check out that on the day of in our story to get your votes in. Mm-hmm. As always, if you'd like to hop in and be a supporter of the show and get some bonus content and just generally be a swell fella or a lady, check us out on patreon.com/90scourt. And of course, check out our merch store, huh? Apparently there's a lot of really cool deals. They're going to have a bunch of 35% off weekends and stuff during the month of April. So always just check in there occasionally, see if they got some sweet deals, $13 t-shirts, 35% off sales. And that's at tpublic.com/user/the90scourt. And as always, if you could be so kind, hop on Apple Podcasts and leave us a nice 5-star rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. Lisa, are there any parting remarks before we depart?
I want to go back to the 90s.
I thought you disconnected.
No, I'm just, my heart's broken because I just want to go back to the 90s. It hurts. So sad. My heart hurts.
I think this court case hurt my heart more than anything. So
I know. I hurt our own feelings.
Yeah, everybody's gonna be real mad at us that we hurt their hearts on a Monday morning. So, anyways.
Welcome back. Anyway, there's some heartbreak for you. Everything you love is gone.
Welcome back.
Yay.
Stay rad, I guess.
Stay rad. Bye. See you guys next week.